This week on Art of the Air features two-time Grammy-nominated virtuoso mandolinist Sierra Hall sharing her new album, A Tiptoe High Wire. Next, powerhouse vocalist Denai Franco bringing her take on classic Afro-Cuban music. Our spotlight's on the 2025 Chesterton Art Fair featuring over 90 artists with live music and food running August 2nd and 3rd at Dogwood Park.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Chesterton Arts Center. And they're going to be talking about the wonderful things coming up there for the Chesterton Art Fair, which is in its 66th season, running August 2nd and 3rd. And, of course, this year it's going to be at Dogwood Park. But we have Micah Bornstein, who is the Marketing Director for the Chesterton Arts Center. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Thanks for having me, Esther. How are
you? Yeah, it's so good to see you.
Likewise.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's going on with the Art Fair this year.
Well, you covered all the pertinent logistics, but I'll go into a little bit of detail about the art fair and what one can expect when visiting Dogwood Park this year. It's a juried art fair. So we solicit applications from artists who have a history of participating in the art fair and some people who this might be their first art fair with us. And so it's a little competitive, right? And from there, we have a juror who selects the people who will participate. You know, deep history of providing a stellar experience for not just the artists, but of course our nearly 4,000 visitors as well that we see on Art Fair weekend. In addition to the arts, exhibiting artists or the vendors, we have live music, family activities, food. There's free parking at Dogwood Park, and it's also accessible for anybody who might need handicap parking as well.
What is the admission this year? Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there we go. It's $5 a person for each day you attend, and anybody 12 and under is admitted free. You can find a lot of the information that I just said, along with some other details, on our website, so chestertonart.org. And from the homepage, it's pretty easy to navigate. It's front and center. This is a flagship program of the Chesterton Art Center, and we spend a lot of time gearing up for it.
It actually was the founding event for the Chesterton Art Center. Well, actually, the actual total is, I think, the Porter County Artisans about things. But the art fair predated the actual art center, even though they are kind of one of the same. Hey, tell us what kind of food that we can expect to have there.
So we'll have Ben's Soft Pretzels, Dog Days Ice Cream Parlor, which is, a fan favorite, Fresh Starts Food Truck, Tacos My Friend, and Travelin' Tom's Coffee of the Dunes, along with a really wonderful music lineup for both days. So on Saturday, we have three musicians. We have Marco Villarreal, Billy Foster, Patty Schaffner. And then on Sunday, Marco's back to start the day, followed by The Sharks and Molly Abraham.
Nice.
And, you know, I really would be remiss. This is a big undertaking that Chesterton Art Center engages with in every year. And so it requires a lot of support, not just from our board and our staff and all that, but it requires some financial backing. And so it's always like nice to recognize the operational support we receive from the Indiana Arts Commission and the John W. Anderson Foundation and the Abelson Foundation Trust. But we get a lot of event support too. We get support from ATG Real Estate Development, LLC, JCMA Inc., Professional Appraisal Services, Sharp Eye Printing, Framing, and Promotion. And then the list goes on as we get closer to the event. And we recognize all those people on our website if you're interested in seeing not just the staff that makes this happen, but the whole team effort, the community comes together to make sure this event comes off.
Well, you know what I noticed on the website, Micah, was the call for volunteers, and there were still a lot of spots left open. So that was, it's very easy to navigate.
Yeah, Esther, I appreciate you for bringing that up. That was a conversation I just had earlier today with some people. We do have a volunteer sign up. It is on the art fair page, not the homepage, but once you navigate to the art fair page, it's right at the top. There's a button. And if you're so inclined, we would greatly value any time you can give to help us set up or manage the activities the day of the fair.
Right. And the volunteers also get the chance, after they do whatever duties they have assigned, to actually enjoy the art fair that day. So it works out really well. Well, tell us a little bit about what we have coming up outside the art fair after we get through that. And the first question, too, is how many people do we have as artists there? But then also beyond the art fair, what's happening at Chesterton Arts Center?
So this year at the art fair, we're in the ballpark of 90 artist vendors, right? So the number can fluctuate depending on, you know, people who might drop out at the last second. So I don't want to tell everybody you can expect to see 90, but it's in that ballpark this year, which is pretty good. Pretty good. I think that's about what we have most years. As the person who puts together the map, I can say that it's a couple more than we had last year. Yeah. Right now, though, at Chesterton Arts Center, I do want to touch upon the exhibit we have up. It's maybe, you know, it's one of our big exhibits of the year. It's right here. Vin and Hazel Hanel and their continued influence. So for those who aren't familiar with Vin and Hazel Hanel and the lore that surrounds them, they were a husband and wife artist pair who lived and made art in Furnaceville, Indiana. And we have a number of pieces up in our gallery right now of theirs, along with around 20 contemporary regional artists who work in the tradition of Vin and Hazel Hanel, that being focused on the natural environment around us and the effort to conserve and protect it.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Year. That's for the Chesterton Art Fair, and that'll be running August 2nd and 3rd. You can find out information, of course, on the website, chestertonart.org. Thank you, Micah, for coming on and telling us all about the art fair.
Thank you for having me, Larry. Thank you for having me, Esther.
Yeah, thank you, Micah.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Sierra Hall to Art on the Air. Sierra is a virtuoso mandolinist, singer-songwriter, and a six-time International Bluegrass Music Association Award recipient. She was the first woman to ever receive that honor. She has had two Grammy nominations for her albums 25 Trips in 2020 and Weighted Mind in 2016. Her innovative sound is deeply rooted in bluegrass, yet continually pushes boundaries. Her newest album is Tiptoe High Wire and is her fourth studio album and the one that she had studio control of, born out of a journey of self-discovery and her drive to grow as an artist. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Sierra. It's so nice meeting you.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
We're glad to have you on. Well, we always like to start out our interviews is with your origin story. I always like to tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Sierra.
Yeah, well, I'm from a little town in the kind of northern middle part of Tennessee, the smallest county, you know, so really in the boonies. It's called Birdstown. There's about, you know, gosh, 700 people these days, I think, where I grew up, kind of one of those no red light kind of towns, you know, hour off the interstate. But, you know, a great part of the world to grow up in. Everybody kind of knows everybody. And all my family's been in that part of the world. Actually, the next town over, Jamestown, Tennessee, is where my parents are both from, also a tiny little town. And so, you know, as far back as I can remember, music was always kind of just a way of life. And for a lot of people around there, you know, it's, none of my family were trying to get on stage and be performers. But, you know, my granny sang, my great aunt, her sister sang, and was married to a man named Junior who played guitar and fiddle, mandolin a little bit, you know. And so I actually grew up right next door to them, to my great aunt and uncle. So when I was a kid, of course, singing in church was part of it. So I sang as far back as I can remember, but my dad started getting into wanting to play a little bit. So my Uncle Junior, I believe, loaned him a guitar and he started learning to play some chords. And, you know, then he kind of got bit by the bluegrass bug, as they say. You know, he had always kind of loved bluegrass, which apparently took my mom by surprise, because, you know, my dad always loved a lot of 80s rock music. My parents are, you know, pretty young. And so that was a lot of the music when they were teenagers, they were growing up with, and all that kind of stuff. And so I remember mom saying, man, when your dad told me he had always loved bluegrass, I was like, huh, really? Like, who is this man? You know, but once he started getting excited by it, I mean, that was like all we listened to, bluegrass, bluegrass gospel. And my dad started going to some of the bluegrass jams there in Jamestown. And you know, it didn't take long before my brother started getting interested a little bit, my dad trying to get both of us into playing. So I actually started playing when I was 8 years old and fell in love with it. Got a fiddle for Christmas, which was just a little bit too big for me to play. It was a full size, you know, my granny and aunt and uncle got it for me. And by the time I stretched my left hand all the way out, I couldn't reach the end of the fingerboard. So the mandolin is tuned like the fiddle. So my dad put one of those, it was my Uncle Junior's old taterbug mandolin, we called them, which is like a bowl back, you know, almost like Italian style mandolin that had just kind of been laying around, hardly ever getting played. And he said, well, here, look, you know, didn't care to put that in the hands of a little 8 year old to kind of mess around with. And so he taught me my first couple tunes, and I just fell in love with it immediately. So it was kind of like, you know, one thing led to another. If you keep practicing, we'll get you a mandolin of your own. And, you know, I was going to these jams and my dad was kind of teaching me all that he could, you know. He himself was sort of learning simultaneously. So as he would learn something, he'd show me. And then next thing you know, we started just kind of meeting all these local musicians, the local musicians inviting me into the fold to, you know, get on stage with them and play. And one person sees you somewhere and then another person sees you somewhere else and you get invited to, you know, we were playing everything from local bean suppers to churches to, you know, benefits. Just loved playing music just every weekend. So, I mean, then that kind of led me to getting invited to doing things like the Kids on Bluegrass at the International Bluegrass Music Association's week there when I was, and to this day, they still have a Kids on Bluegrass program where they invite kids from all across the country to kind of come gather together and play. And IBMA is kind of like the big week for bluegrass music where a lot of, you know, fans and heroes alike kind of gather, and the Bluegrass Music Awards happen. So it's both, you know, a kind of a convention with workshops and, you know, part festival, part award show, all that kind of stuff. So it was a really big deal for me to get to go to that as a kid, because I was from such a rural part of the state that, you know, my heroes didn't really come, they didn't come close to where I was. You know, a big festival would have been like 200 people, you know, where I was.
So how does that happen? Do you apply for that, or how did you become aware of it?
You know, someone just heard about me through the grapevine, I think, like, hey, there's this young girl playing mandolin, and, you know, reached out. I'm not 100% sure, even to this day, how it happened. But I just remember somebody calling our house and inviting me to come be part of that, you know. And my parents were hardworking folks, you know, working day jobs all through the week. And the idea of being able to, you know, travel very much or go very far was, we didn't do that a lot, you know? So at the time it was in Louisville, Kentucky. So that was kind of that was a big deal for us to get invited, and let alone get, you know, a free pass and to be able to go to an event like this that otherwise would have cost a lot of money too, to do. So, you know, looking back, what a huge opportunity. Cause I remember meeting, you know, Ricky Skaggs that first year. I met Earl Scruggs, you know, I met Sam Bush. It was like all these heroes, you know, just Ricky Skaggs walks off an elevator. Oh my gosh, you know, so let alone getting the opportunity to play with some young musicians. But I feel like that sort of was a really pivotal moment pretty early on. I think I'd been playing about a year at that point. So, you know, all those stepping stones, one thing leads to another, and, you know, the snowball effect of that, I suppose, of opportunity, you know, meets preparation kind of thing.
So did you have to be prodded to practice, or did you just naturally enjoy it?
I loved it. I mean, I loved it so early on. There's a, you know, kind of a funny thing and looking back at that time, because, you know, when you're that young, some of it gets a little cloudy, you know, in your memory of like what it was really like. But I can honestly say there's not really a time in my life now that I can remember when I didn't want to do this. You know, I've spent way more of my life, you know, as a musician now than anything. So, but I mean, just like anything, you know, as a young kid, there's always a little bit of that healthy encouragement. My dad knew that this, I mean, I said, this is what I wanted. And I think it was clear to my parents that I had a real love and passion for it. But just like anything, you can love something and be passionate about it, but have your moments of being lazy or getting sidetracked or just being a kid, you know? And so there was never, they weren't stage parents. There was never some desire to push me to do it for any kind of ulterior motive. It was just kind of like, hey, you know, if kind of a healthy reminder, like, if you want this, like you say you do, now you're going to have to work a lot harder, because, you know, right now you're cute and, you know, young, and everybody goes, oh, look at this little girl playing the mandolin, you know, she's great. But dad's like, that cute thing's going to wear off. So if you really want this, you better work for it. Cause one day you're going to wake up and be, you know, 16, you're going to wake up and be 25, and you need to have, you know, earned your seat at, have the skills and earned a seat at the table. So there was like a healthy push, you know, at times, when that I'm grateful for, honestly, cause I think there is a certain amount of needing that honesty, even as a kid, to sort of recognize, you know, if this is really what you want, that you're not just going to get it handed to you.
Well, you know, we want to jump ahead a little bit because I don't want to run out of time to play songs. And I know that this is your fourth album that you were creatively more in control of after your previous record contract. But you also released the very title song, or the first song, Boom, on it. Tell us a little bit about that and we'll take a listen to it.
Yeah, Boom is a song I wrote with a great songwriter here in Nashville named Adam Wright. And it was the first song that we actually got in the studio and recorded for this record. So in some ways, it kind of set a tone of, I feel like it set a tone of joy for this record.
Yeah,
you know,
playfulness.
Playfulness. And I think, like, you know, around the time of working on this record, I was sort of in a place where I was really desiring to write some music. You know, so much of the music I grew up with in bluegrass is a lot of, you know, you might have the most tragic lyric ever, but the music's like, woohoo, you know, it's fun and playful. And so, you know, a lot of my music, as I've kind of explored, has obviously that deep bluegrass influence, but has kind of stepped outside those boundaries a little bit too. And so I feel like Boom sort of bridges the gap of trying to find some of that joyful playfulness that bluegrass has, while also kind of dipping a toe into a more contemporary space musically.
Well, let's take a listen to that. This is Boom from A Tiptoe High Wire with our guest today, Sierra Hall.
Love again. You gotta open up.
back from Tiptoe High Wire album Boom with our guest today, Sierra Hall.
You know, to me, when I listened to it, it felt like the vocals were floating on top of the music in like a completely delightful way. It was just, you know, usually like everything comes at once, but your vocals were right on top. It was beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, this song's all about like, you know, opening up the windows and actually letting some sunshine in and, you know, kind of like, you know, not dwelling on those tough times, you know. And this song was kind of written also in the middle of the pandemic, actually, as far back as that now. And so it was like one of the first songs that I wrote and started feeling like, oh, this could be the beginning of a new record. You know, I had just finished my 25 Trips album that came out right at the beginning of the pandemic, actually about a week into the pandemic. And so I wound up with all this kind of unexpected time at home. And you know, as I was starting to write, you know, we're both writing from this place of I think everybody feeling a little, you know, frightened about what the future holds or just a little bit like that uncertainty, you know, but also trying to look in that space and sort of find the joy in the midst of it all too. So there's underlying themes of that throughout this record.
I know. My favorite line in that was, let the shadows have the shade. It was just yeah. It's like a great line.
Thank you.
So you've been on tour a lot. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. And of course, you've been doing interviews, PBS Canvas, and I think you did the Tiny Desk concert. But also tell us about some of your touring schedule.
Yeah, it's been a really exciting year thus far. We've had just such a blast. We kind of kicked off back. The record came out March 7th. And so we sort of kicked off a really busy season of touring around the end of February. That's felt kind of nonstop, kind of a lot of headline shows around the album. We got to do the Willie Nelson Outlaw tour with Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan and Billy Strings. And like that was just a blast. So now we're kind of about to enter into some headline touring as well, but it's festival season. Festival season has arrived, so which is one of my favorite times of year because you get to see a lot of friends out there out on the road and also just like sit back and hear music, you know, as a fan, getting to catch other people's set. So we've got a really busy year ahead of us, lots of fun stops all around the country. And I'm just trying to be as in the moment and present as possible in this season. Cause you know, it's like we've, you know, definitely you mentioned doing the Tiny Desk concert and even the Outlaw tour we just did. There's a lot of like kind of bucket list moments that I feel like we've kind of had this year, and it's easy to be so busy. You kind of like miss the moment, you know? So I'm trying to stay present and just be grateful for everything, you know, in the midst of releasing this music and finally being able to share it with everybody.
Well, besides the mandolin, are you still playing violin or anything on your performances?
No, I mean, you know, yeah, I can scratch around on a fiddle a little bit, but you wouldn't want to hear it, I don't think. You know, I started playing mandolin, you know, at 8, and then about a year later picked up guitar. So I still play a lot of acoustic guitar, you know, grew up being a big Tony Rice, Doc Watson fan, people like that, you know, so learned a lot of the flat pick and stuff, and I still use it a lot in my songwriting. You know, I'm playing the acoustic guitar on the Boom recording as well. So, you know, things like that kind of end up being an integral part of the themes that I write sometimes are inspired by guitar. So, but you know, mandolin's always, that's always been my kind of primary instrument on the stage and sort of what I feel like is my main musical voice.
Besides being a vocalist.
Yes. Besides being a vocalist as an instrumentalist, that is, you know.
Well, we want to take a listen to another song, and this is sort of different, Come Out of My Blues, and tell us a little bit about that, and we'll take a listen to it.
Yeah, I wrote this with a great songwriter, Pat McLaughlin. You know, we lost the great John Prine during the pandemic, and as we were sort of coming out of that season, and of course, I was writing a lot for the songs that would eventually be on this record around that time, and I just thought to myself, you know, I'd loved a lot of the songs that that John had written with Pat over the years, including a song called Summer's End, which I recorded and released a cover of around that time, kind of in John's honor. And I remember thinking how cool it would be to get together and write a song with Pat. And we had a lot of mutual friends. And so we got together and, you know, this song, it's funny, it kind of started, I just loved the joyful lyric again. Like, you know, it's so easy as a songwriter. I've always been attracted to like really sad songs and sort of introspective writing. And so I feel like there was a little bit of a shift. Of course, there's some of that on this record naturally, but But, you know, this record felt like a bit of a shift in trying to find some joy in the lyric and expressing that part of thinking about what it would feel like to sort of stand on stage and celebrate, you know, making music again. And so this song, Come Out of My Blues, definitely sort of celebrates that moment when you feel like you've been going through a hard time. And again, you're starting to feel that joy again, you know. So we had a completely different melody for this song at first. And then one day I was sitting with my mandolin in my hand, changing strings or something like that, and kind of stumbled upon a fun kind of split tuning where, you know, the mandolin has the tuning in pairs. It's tuned like a violin, but there's 8 strings. So tuned, you know, G, D, A, E, but you can split those 2 strings every now and then and get some really interesting combinations, which is pretty unusual. Bill Monroe did it a little bit, but anyway, I found this kind of fun, interesting thing on the instrument and sort of rewrote the melody. And I said, Pat, you know, I didn't mean for these lyrics to fit this melody, but gosh, I just feel like they do. And I said, I wonder if you would be okay with me, like, adapting the lyrics we wrote to this new melody. And he was so kind to do that. So I wanted it to kind of feel like, you know, the joy of the lyric, but also like an old-time raging fiddle tune, sort of. So leaning into that more old-time bluegrass feel.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Come Out of My Blues from the A Tiptoe High Wire, Sarah Hall.
Birds are singing right outside my door. Songs I never heard them singing before. I'm loving all you and the things you do. Let's go walking for a mile or two. Give me a minute so I can find my shoes. I think I'm beginning to come out of my blues. I hear lately it's been going round. It gets lonely when the sun sinks down. This here living gets complicated.
Out of My Blues from the A Tiptoe High Wire album that was released in March with Sarah Hall today as our guest on Art on the Air.
Yeah, and that banjo, it adds such a delicate, it really adds a delicacy to it. It felt like I was listening like through lace almost. And I don't know if you've ever worked with Abigail Washburn, because she's the artist that I listen to on a loop. I adore Abigail. Have you worked with her at all?
Yeah, well, she happens to be married to Bela Fleck, yeah, who I've spent a lot of time working with. Abigail actually sang on my record, Weighted Mind, and through all my work with Bela, I've got to know her. You know, they're like family, so I love them. She's such an incredible artist in her own right, and just love her playing and singing, and her as a human. She's so wonderful. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, in our last minutes here, Sarah, and we want to give you a chance to tell us how people can find you out online, where they can get your album, and maybe any local tours. This is going to air mid-July, so where you might be or someone can find you.
Yeah, well, we kick back off on the road mid-July. Going to be kind of here, there, and everywhere. Folks can find the full tour schedule at my website, sierrahull.com. Links to all the socials, way to stream the new album or pick up a copy of the vinyl, whatever you want. You can kind of find it all there at sierrahull.com.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air, the Sierra Hull. Her new album, A Tiptoe High Wire, it's real listenable. I know I've listened to it several times, even in my car, my little old iPod. And you can find it at sierrahull.com. Thank you so much for coming to Art in the Air and sharing your arts and music journey. It's been very fascinating.
Thanks, y'all. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you out there in person sometime soon.
Yeah, it was a complete pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Jessica Lynn, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Danai Franco to Art on the Air. Danai is a gifted vocalist, and from a young age, she displayed a natural talent for music and performance. Her deep love for classical music led her to formally study opera. Her early career flourished with performances in her home of Cuba. She gravitated then to musical theater. Her versatility allowed her to perform Broadway-style productions. Now based in the United States, she is dedicated to fusing her operatic background with contemporary Cuban and American sounds. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Danai. It's very, very nice meeting you.
Thank you for inviting me, Esther and Larry. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here and honored. I think this is my first interview in the United States.
Oh, that's fantastic. We are the lucky ones that have you the first time out. Well, you know, what our audience likes to hear is the background of our guests. And I always say their origin story, how I keyed up and saying how they got from where they were to where they are now. So tell us all about Danai.
Yes. So I was born in Cuba. My mom is a dentist. My dad used to work in a factory of cigar in Cuba. And I didn't have any musicians in my family. I think my grandma, my dad's mom, she loved to sing, but her dad never let her do it. So when she saw me singing and that I like to sing and being so like histrionic about like to dance, singing, acting, everything, she was like, oh, finally, you're going to be what I never was able to do be. Yeah, she was so happy. She passed away like maybe 10 years ago, but I know that she's still with me. She's following everywhere I go. Because that was her dream and also is mine. So since I was a kid, I was just there performing for my family first, then for my neighbors in Cuba, for everyone. And my dad was so happy. And they just was, then I, okay, sing for this person. And I just started to sing like until my mom, of course, she is a doctor, so she have that mindset of okay, you want to do this professionally, let's do it. So she took me to the music school when I was 7 years old, but I was too young and I didn't know what that was about. I was not prepared for that, but that was for piano, for go as a piano player. And I really was not focused on that at the time. I want to be a singer. So when they told me piano, I did the test, but I was not like, I was not approved in that time. So 2 years after, she took me to the same school, but this time she told me this is for singing. So I was like, what? Okay, I like this. When I was 9 years old, I did the test and I put all my heart in that one. So I got approved in that. And we were 10 kids that were approved just in the with a choral direction and also singing. But that was amazing for me because there were more kids and different, like trumpet and different instruments, trumpet, flute. Also, there were kids in piano and violin, everything. And we were all in the same classroom. And that was, for me, amazing to grow up with all those musicians that right now, all of them are doing their jobs everywhere in the whole world. And now I'm in the United States, but there are people in France, there are people in Egypt, there are people everywhere. So it's amazing how those kids, now right now, they're doing everything around the world. So after that, I went to, there was an opening for the, because that was the elementary school, and then there was the conservatory, but the conservatory was in opera. And it's very funny, but I've never heard an opera before in my life. And I was like, this is opera. So if I know how to sing opera, I think I can sing everything. That was my thought when I was 14. It was like, okay, I'm going there. I want to know how to do that. And even though I didn't have the opera technique, they saw something in me, the teachers, and they approved me for that. So I studied opera for 9 years, four in the conservatory, and then I went to the University of Arts in Havana, and I studied 5 more years. But all that was at the same time that I was involved with all of the arts, like doing Cuban music, singing with Cuban music, popular music, and also working in a lyric theater in my hometown, Hoguin. And they taught me everything about how to walk on the stage, how to talk. When you're in the theater, you cannot talk in like this. You need to project your voice because the opera is not just singing. It's also you need to talk. And then after you talk, you're singing. So you cannot talk there is technique to talk on the stage. So it was a great experience for me, and I'm glad that I did it because that been helping me everywhere I go.
So I see also you did some, and this may be jumping ahead before you came, but you also were doing some musical theater. I think you were in Les Mis, and what other productions were you in?
Yes, in the music and the lyric theater, we did Los Miserables, I think Les Miserables. We did like an operetta. It's like Spanish operetta. Like Los Gavilanes were the ones that we did the most. Like every year we used to do that one, and because also operas are very expensive, so in the theater in my hometown they were like, oh no, this is something small. So they used to do, when they wanted to do opera, they did like, so they should say that when they want to do opera, we did concerts of opera. When I used to do Carmen, I did La Seguidilla, La Habanera, but also we do small operettas like Los Gavilanes from Spain and Zarzuela too. And Zarzuela Español is Cuban Zarzuela too, that we have also that there. Amazing composers like Ernesto Lecuona. My life was very into music, and all my friends and everybody was, I was just very involved in, I never did anything else, just teaching. Also, I was teacher at the university. Once I graduated from the university, I taught opera there too. At the same time that I was working with the lyric theater, and then I was touring around my hometown and also around Cuba. I went to Havana, to Pinar del Rio, Matanzas, all the different provinces in Cuba with different shows that we used to take everywhere. And also there was a time that I decided to work in a cabaret, And for an opera singer, all my friends were like, "Then are you sure you want to do this?" Because opera is very like elegant and you're singing and everything is, and it's like ballet. And then you want to do something so like popular and so like different, like a cabaret. And I was like, I'm a person that I like to learn from experience. And I think if I put myself into a cabaret to do cabaret music, that is going to bring something to me. So I was like, I want to do that too. And I went there. They were looking for a singer. And I was like, okay, I'm an opera singer, but I think I can do this too. At the beginning, the director was like, your voice still has a little bit vibrato, and I still have that. You can say in my, when I sing, people that have heard me, they said that a lot about, you study opera because you have your vibrato mm-hmm. there. Yes, I can. Right now, I don't know if I'm able to get rid of it. Sometimes I'm trying. I've been singing songs from Sade. You know, that she does that is just, she doesn't vibe. She's just maybe vibrate a little bit. But I'm trying to do her music, and I need to put a lot of focus on the vibrato.
Well, you know what I want to do right now, Denai, is listen to the Solamente Un Vez, just a sample of that. Yeah, we've done this. So let's take a quick listen to that.
Okay.
Denai Franco and Solamente Un Vez, more of her operatic type side singing.
Yeah, I love that video. So I want to ask sort of a fluff question. So did you do your own costuming and makeup? Because it's just so beautiful.
Right now I'm doing myself because I learned. But for that video, we hired one of my friends that was very good at that. So he was the one that did the whole my makeup. The clothes that I was wearing, I was the one that decided to wear it, even though I talked to all of them to see if that would be, I have different options, and then we decided to do that that specific one. But yeah, right now I enjoy to do it myself. I always talk about wherever I go, even for this interview, I was asking Larry, like, okay, Larry, do I have to be dressed or what? Because dress up. He was like, no, it's okay. I was okay. Because I like that. I like that about it's very fun. And if I'm a singer, I like to do it like the best I can. And I'm having fun singing and I'm having fun also.
It was perfect for that video because you look like this beautiful golden cigar as well, you know. The dress is very reminiscent of a cigar, and it just fit the background so beautiful. It was a beautiful video.
Well, and like you said, presentation is everything. Speaking of which, we want to take a quick listen to a sample of your current music here. This is kind of what you're doing. I pulled this one from Facebook just for a moment here. Okay, and of course that's Danai Franco, and kind of what you're doing now. And I took that sample from her Facebook page. There's another one that you did. It's an outdoor video. Mio Rito Saco. Tell us a little bit about that. We'll take a listen to that.
Yes, Mi Ritmo Saco. That one was one of my best friend's idea. He was like, "Hey, Danai, he's from the United States. He's a composer too, and he used to go to Cuba a lot." And one time we were like, okay, we need to do something good. So he asked me, what are the best people here that, the best, I don't know, producers? We want to do something good. And I was like, okay, let's do this song. Let's change a little bit the lyrics. That will be more Caribbean. Let's change also the genre a little bit, more Caribbean too. Let's make it in the... So all of us was just bouncing ideas and until we got this one, this video. And I like this one, this video a lot because that represents a lot of work from a lot of people at the same time. It's not just one person that decided to do everything. It was all of us getting together at the same time and saying, what do you think about this? Let's try to do this. And I really like to work like that. And I think that that's why this video was so important for all of us. And also, it's so, I like it, especially I like it. It's beautiful. It doesn't represent really like just me. This is my art. It's more the art of everyone that just put a little bit in this video.
It's a great collaboration. Let's take a quick listen to that.
Dana Seville, just in love, una nueva fórmula para que lo puedas bailar.
Solo y sin amor,
solo y sin amor.
Si crees que no hay solución,
oh, oh, oh,
yo te tenemos de tanta.
Was our guest today tonight, Franco, and she's doing Mio Marito Sacco. Hey, we only have about a minute left. We want to give you a chance to tell people how they can find out about you, like where you're performing at. This will air sometime late July, but like I know recently you were at Don Quixote here about a couple of weeks ago celebrating their 40th anniversary, but where can they find out all about you? Website, Facebook, that type of thing. And
right now, I'm new in the United States, so I'm starting my career again here. I came 3 years ago, and I know that it's a little bit difficult when you go like from your country to another one to start over again. But even though I've been finding a lot of good people that want to help me, and they are trusting in me. And one of them is the Don Quixote restaurant. I used to work there as a server before. And they are like my family, and they, from the beginning, they trust in me. And they was like, wait, you need to do your first concert. When you decided to start your career, you need to do it here. And also in Troll Music here. And I used to live in Indiana, in Valparaiso, Indiana, but I moved in 6 months ago to Florida. And I'm starting over here again. I don't know why I do those things, but I'm like that. And here is very good. Also, I was trying to look for more jobs opportunity as a singer, and has been very good here. My next concert in Don Quixote, I did a concert like 2 weeks ago, and my next one is going to be in October the 12th. In Don Quixote restaurant, it's gonna be a Cuban show, but also because it's the Heritage Day is the 12th of October, and also I want to do Cuban and I want to do Spanish music and a little bit of mix of everything, also Mexican like boleros, things like that. So it's gonna be very entertaining. So I hope that people from Indiana or from here everywhere they can just go. And also have a gazpacho, paella.
Sounds
Carlos
great.
Very good.
Well, we have to end it here. That's Danai Franco. You can see her in October at Don Quixote. And you can find her online at her Facebook page just by searching her name. Thank you, Danai, for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your music journey.
Thank you for inviting me. Larry and Esther. That was so good. Thank you very much.
Oh, best of luck. It was so much fun. Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com. patreon.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the